And I'm talking about certificate of need. You're right, there is no relationship. Completely unrelated. I do work at the National Institute of Health, the Dental and Craniofacial Research in the Behavioral and Social Science Research Branch. This presentation, certificate of need, really comes out of some of the work that I did in graduate school, and I, at risk of sounding like a real geek, out of a hobby to look at that. So, that being said, I'd like to mention that we have no personal financial relationships, no other relationships to disclose at this level. I am at, as mentioned, NIDCR. If any of you guys are, in fact, thinking about doing a NIH-funded grant looking at dental practices and economics, I'm your guy. So I mentioned the standard disclosure work is done in a personal capacity and does represent pretty much anyone other than my co-authors, which are Jim Holsinger and Doug Schutchfeld, both at the University of Kentucky College of Public Health. Certificate of need, enacted as a result of increasing healthcare costs. I know it's a shock that people would still be talking about increasing healthcare costs even today. So it's at the point that they got this going in the 70s, hospitals were viewed as one of the major drivers of increased costs, because at that point, Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement was tied to facility costs. And with Romer's Law and supplier-induced demand, it was a big push to say what we need to do is we need to get these hospitals, this bed-built, bed-filled kind of thing out of the way. Another reason that CO1 was very popular is that healthcare really does not conform to traditional economic models. So CO1 was mandated by the federal government from 76 to 83, and what I mean by mandated is that they tied other dollars to it. So they said, since they can't force the state to enact CO1, they said, well, if you want these other dollars, you got to have a CON. So all but Louisiana had a CON from 76 to 83. At 83, they said, we don't care anymore. And since then, in kind of various stages, 16 states have repealed CON. So there's 16 with, and then the remainder in the District of Columbia with a certificate of need program still. If you look back at the literature, what they talked about is what they were promising with certificate of need is they wanted to lower healthcare costs. They're gonna reduce SID, especially for hospital services. They're gonna match needs, the needs of the population to the supply, and they were gonna improve quality and access. So what I wanna do is I wanna go through these goals as they were described initially and talk about what type of metrics, how can we prove or disprove what's going on and whether they were successful or not. So let's look at one of the goals, which is they're gonna match hospital bed supply to the healthcare needs. The proof is that if in fact CON's working, they're going to have fewer beds per 100,000 population compared to the non-CON states, simply because the CON states without that type of, or sorry, the non-CON states without that regulation are just going to build all over the place. Everyone's going to have a bed, and maybe two beds. So what we look at is we show hospitals per 100,000 population, and in fact, there are two lines there. It may be difficult to see, but the number of hospitals are virtually identical between the CON and the non-CON states. But when we look at bed supply per 100,000 population, we're finding that CON states are in fact higher than the non-CON states. Now it's gotten closer, this gap is closed, but if you look at this period here from about 2000 to 2007, it comes out to an average of about 35 more beds or roughly 16% more increase in the bed supply per 100,000 population in the CON versus the non-CON states. I ran a regression model using inpatient beds as a dependent variable. I used in this particular model here, it was 2004 data. I used population, CON status, and state health rank, which was provided by United Healthcare Foundation. Why did I use that? Let me see if I can do this, if I can go forward and backwards. You probably don't need to be an epidemiologist to see a clustering of non-CON states. So in fact, maybe one of the issues and one of the things we're trying to develop a model that really tells a story, maybe the people in these states are just healthier. They got California. Maybe they're just generally healthier than these states over here. So I wanted to throw in something that would help predict that. It worked. So what we find is, in fact, population, not surprising, incredibly highly correlated with the number of beds, as it should be. Health rank, also significant to the model, is the state is healthier, there are fewer beds. And CON, not so much, with a p-value of 0.445, so not significant to the model. Is the model any good? I thought the 941 on the R-square was pretty good, but maybe I'm a little biased. So, same goal. CON is gonna match the bed supply to the healthcare needs of the population. How can we prove that? states that repeal CON are in fact going to have a huge growth in hospital bed supply, because once you remove that restriction, that barrier, suddenly everyone's just going to want to start building beds all over the place. Wings will be going up, new hospitals will be showing up. So what do we show? Well, not so much. This is, as you can tell, this is not 16 states. Some of the states I did not include because they didn't have complete data. So these are the ones that basically from 85 on. All of the states, and this is the how many their beds per 100,000 population 1 year after repeal of CON, 3 years after repeal of CON, and 5 years after repeal of CON. All but North Dakota had a decrease. And so as you're thinking to yourself, gosh, Dave, didn't you just show a slide a few minutes ago that shows that the nation's supply of beds is going down? And you're absolutely right. So I said, well, maybe the problem is that CON states, what they're really doing is they're decreasing at a faster rate. That's what's happening, except not so much. So what we find is that if we compare, there's the two clusters. If I go back for just 1 second, there's the two clusters. You notice the 85 group and the 87 group. So just for sake of argument, I pulled those guys out. And this is what happens when you look at from 85 to 86, Arizona decreased their bed supply by 2.8% as opposed to the entire United States. All United States hospitals decreased by 3%. So they did not decrease as fast. Kansas from 85 to 90 only decreased by 10.1% as opposed to the national decrease of 12.1%. And from 87 to 88, Colorado only decreased by 0.4%. But oh yeah, all of the other incidents were faster decline, whereas those states that repealed CON actually reduced beds at a faster rate, except for those three cases there, as compared to the entire United States. So it didn't really work there well there either. Our next goal is CON is going to lower healthcare costs and reduce supplier-induced demand. How can we prove that? The CON states are going to have lower average hospital spending. Isn't that one of the things we're hoping to reduce? So this is a very popular, flagrantly stolen from Bureau of Economic Affairs. It's a very popular slide these days. This is expenditures on all healthcare as a percent of gross domestic product. Yes, it's going up, and this is only through 2004. I think we're 15 or approaching 16% now. So yes, healthcare is going up, but we're not interested in all healthcare spending. CON was not designed to tackle all healthcare spending. So let's pull out hospital spending as a percent of gross state product. And we'll compare the CON to the non-CON states. What we find is that, in fact, the CON states are, this hospital spending is greater in CON as opposed to non-CON states. Another way of looking at this, as opposed to just gross state product, is as we all, or most of us are all aware, that cost of living in some states is a lot higher than in other states. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's an issue of how much, you know, it costs to have a hospital in New York City or as opposed to Los Angeles. So I pulled out another one from the U.S. Census where they talk about personal disposable income. And the ratio of net hospital revenue to personal disposable income again shows CON is higher than the non-CON states. And I thought this was a remarkably flat line considering that hospital revenue more than doubled from 93 to 04. So it's flat lines, similar lines, but CON more than the non-CON states. So CON is going to lower healthcare costs and reduce supplier-induced demand. How can we prove that? Well, the CON states are in fact going to have lower average length of stay and a lower bed occupancy because that's what they're doing. We're going to, no more Romer's Law. We're going to go ahead and get rid of it because that's one of the big goals of CON. So what do we show? Well, in fact, they're very, very similar. Average length of stay is virtually identical between the two, especially over the last several years. And the percent bed occupancy, again, a very, very close relationship until you consider the fact that there's 16% more beds in the CON states as opposed to the non-CON states. So in fact, we should expect that to be lower for bed occupancy. So maybe that Romer guy was right. CON is going to improve quality and access to care. I really, really, really wanted to have some slides on this. And I looked at a couple different data sets. The problem that I ran into is that they're either based on voluntary or partial reporting. So two of the ones that I thought were really promising that down the road I think would be very helpful is CMS is now looking at hospital readmission rates. I think it's going to be a fantastic measure of quality. And the National Nosocomial Infection Surveillance System, CDC, another fantastic quality issue Right now, I think they're up to about 300 hospitals that are voluntarily reporting to that. If you can convince me that that's an adequate representative sample between CON and non-CON, yeah, I'm not buying that. So I left those out, but I really, really wanted to have a slide or a slide or two on this area. How did CON do? Well, didn't really lower healthcare costs, didn't really match needs to supply, and we don't know yet about access and quality. It didn't work. So why didn't CON affect healthcare revenue or hospital revenue? Well, if you think in terms of hospital revenue as the squeeze toy, you have regulated and unregulated items. Within non-CON, of course, there is no regulated item. So the toy, the revenue exists kind of in its natural state. But when you start to say, you know, you're going to have to ask permission before you add those 200 beds. If you want to add some capital equipment, you're going to have to get permission to do that. So what happens is you start squeezing that, and they find other ways. Hospital administrators, at least my experience, they're smart people. They're really smart people, and they know the business end of this. So yes, if you make this restriction here, they're going to find other ways to increase revenue or to make money. So why is CON still supported? Well, if I were a hospital, I'd be all in favor of CON because it limits competition. It does a great job of limiting competition. The CON applications, depending on which article you read, some of them suggest that if you're an existing hospital, just kind of rubber stamped. And in other facilities, it's just, you know, it's a little more of a process. There is some support to say that CON does work for the nursing home bed supply. I didn't look at that. I just looked at acute non-federal acute care hospital beds. And CON talks about, I got plenty of time, good. that was my 5-minute warning. So the CON and improved surgical outcomes is one of the claims that was made. So basically what you're saying is that, if you can follow the chain here, CON restricts the number of facilities that can perform these complex surgical procedures. Therefore, there are fewer facilities. Those that do it have a higher volume. There's another body of literature that says when you have higher volume, you have better outcomes for some complex, not all, but some complex surgical procedures. This piece is not 100% clear yet. This piece is not 100% clear yet. There's some good support, but this jump here, I'm not buying that one. So, CON, people ask me about a lot of times about what healthcare, and it's like, well, what's wrong with healthcare? My general response is that healthcare is in the condition that it's in today because a series of good decisions, because a series of good ideas. And CON was one of those good ideas that at the time made a lot of sense. But when you look at the data, now that we're out of, especially with prospective payment in the DRGs and not tied to facility costs, it's not making a lot of sense to me. Questions?
Why is CON not tied to facility costs if that might actually make this model more publicly accountable? I mean, you made a good case for why it isn't effectively implemented now. I mean, demonstrated that it's not effectively implemented now. But it's not clear to me that a deregulated situation gives us more influence over costs, quality, or anything useful. It seems like improving the CON process, possibly by expanding it, might be a better approach, particularly if it was conditional and required, and was based on ongoing performance and not just when you begin the process.
Yes, correct. One of the things that we talked about as co-authors is saying, you know, well, what if we're going to get, should we just say that CON should be withdrawn entirely, or should we, is there other, are there other alternatives? One of the things we played with is something called certificate of volume. In which case, and I know that they're doing this somewhat in the dental industry, that if you have to do a certain number of procedures to kind of maintain that accreditation. Of course, the problem you run into there, the obvious problem is you have a huge supplier-induced demand issue. Because if you're telling me that I have to do 10 angioplasties a year and I'm only up to 8, you can bet I'm going to find 2 more people that need it, whether they really need it or not. So there's a problem with that. So could you transform these CON offices at the state level to a more of a utilization review type of model? In which case you can have them look at the quality that's being going on while you maintain a certificate of volume. Another thing, one of the issues I have with the pay-for-performance issue, is that you then incent practitioners and hospitals to not take sick patients. You know, is in fact, I'd like to, if, you know, if that were the case, then I really want to be that person that takes only the healthiest of patients. I know that one of the complaints of CON, one of the opponents of CON, sorry, let me rephrase that, those who don't want to get rid of CON, really say that if we get rid of CON, that you're going to have these specialty hospitals and you're going to have a this skimming of cream, that you're going to take the wealthiest patients away and they're going to leave the community hospitals with the indigent patients who are unable to pay. A fascinating article I just read a couple of weeks ago that talked about how the introduction of specialty hospitals into, you know, communities where just the existing hospital was, that existing community hospital generally showed a profit, an increased profit, as opposed to before it came in. I looked at this article. Are you serious? Fascinating article. Yes, sir.
When you're looking at the first analysis with beds, why didn't you compare it with non-CON states instead of the whole U.S.?
Oh, why did I do that? Simply because I wanted to show the overall trend for everything. Because in fact, those CON states, if I had to pull those out of there, would have actually showed probably a bigger effect. And I didn't see that was necessary. The question that we really had coming in was not, is there a significant difference between the two? It was really more of a one-tailed test. How much better is CON as opposed to non-CON? And we just didn't get that at all. I didn't need to run those tests for those ones where you saw that the CON costs were higher. It'd be an interesting controlled trial, but
right.
We randomized states.
There could be ways to fill in some of that, I mean, and at least try to shed some light on the ways in which they might be, what you're observing is actually a result of things that happened before CON and non-CON. You're attributing one of
these. And there were some very big changes that occurred since CON was enacted and have gone. So at some level, when it came down to the analysis, it's like we had what we had.
Last,
do we have time for?
Okay. Last question.
Yes, sir.
I came in during your presentation, so I don't know if you addressed it, but CON provides a context for some community engagement, input into the process of approving a particular application. Since that would enable people to say, this particular proposal may not be the highest priority for the geographical area that this hospital is located in. We don't have a lot of mechanisms where those kinds of issues get raised. And I'm wondering if you see the value of having that kind of mechanism for public input and potential accountability, or whether you don't take that into account because they vary so much in different states, and probably in the same state at different times?
It depends, largely on, I guess at some level, who's being asked. I saw something talking about people who were going to choose pieces of insurance for themselves, and a lot of them were saying, well, I don't want to get this drug and alcohol insurance because your drug and alcohol addiction insurance, because I'm not going to have that problem. When in fact, how do you really predict whether you are or not? And maybe it's too late, but at some level, when you talk about going back to the cross-subsidization area, yes, I think the panel of some people who are true stakeholders, some experts in the area, yes, I highly value that input. But if I'm just going to put it to a general vote, I'm not so sure. I really have questions about that. So yes, I do value input from the community, depending on, you know, who I'm asking. I mean, I hate to sound rude about that, but, you know, it really depends on, you know, I read articles too that same way. It's, you know, I look at the, you know, where they're coming from, and I did a huge lit review before I did this, and I noticed a huge disparity. Those who were pro CON were pretty much consultants, and those who were anti-CON were pretty much found in the peer-reviewed literature. It was a, you know, it's not 100% for each side, but pretty close. So.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, Dave. And now we're going to have a presentation from Jonathan Sunshine, who is the Director of Research at the American College of Radiology.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, and sorry my name doesn't bring you better weather today, but I hope maybe my presentation will